Thank you very much for your speech. Can you talk a little bit about Canadian politics? What's the way out? Are you a socialist? What about the Labour Party in Canada? Does the NDP offer any hope? I know it's their position on Quebec is hopeless, but is there a way out? Is there a way that we can fight back politically in Canada? And then you can mention also the Parti Québécois.
I don't belong to any particular political party. I have friends in many parties from all across the spectrum. I don't think that we can deal with this issue in the framework of parliamentary politics, because we're dealing with something which affects everybody. So in other words, we have to mobilize everybody. We have to mobilize ordinary citizens into understanding what's going on, okay? I don't care to what party they belong. Even if they belong to the Reform Party, they're going to understand what happens when they lose their schools, okay? And in other words, what we have to do is to build a broad-based mass movement which does not rely there may be political parties which will help us do that, but inasmuch as political parties are geared toward having elected officials in some kind of idiotic parliament which doesn't do anything in any case, I'd rather put my energies in building a grassroots movement which does not necessarily use the existing political cleavages which are now present. Now, that's not to say that within some of these parties you've got good people working. The same thing is in the NGOs. I mean, there are very good people in the NGOs. But we have to break down, we have to start mobilizing everywhere in the country, in the schools, the parishes, the workplaces, door to door. This is something which everybody has to understand. And it's happening. Okay? I mean, municipalities are meeting in Quebec and Ontario on this particular subject. How is the free trade agreement going to affect municipalities? I can tell you what's going to happen. They will disappear. They don't exist anymore. Okay? That's what will happen.
Speaking as an American, in the United States, activists tend to refer to the corporate empire as opposed to the American empire, since American empire means me, and I have nothing to do with this. But anyway, I just wanted to know if you felt that it was at all possible for fair trade and free trade to exist together. There seems to be a dialogue where I come from about which one we have to choose between the two. And to me, it seems that there must be a way to put regulation on corporations and still have free trade. Ironically, free trade seems to be defined by corporations. It doesn't need to be. So I'm just wondering, from an economist's standpoint, if this is possible.
Well, first of all, I mean, you're coming from the United States. This is a war against the U.S., the people of America. We are building solidarity within the empire, okay? I think the people of the United States are well aware of what their government is doing. Okay, it's not simply a question of chads. Okay, it's of dripping chads in the Florida election. It's much more fundamental. With regard to your question, first of all, please understand, free trade is a misleading concept. It doesn't exist. Okay. This has nothing to do with trade. It is creating a regulatory environment which allows capital to do what they want. Now, if you're going to talk about free trade, it means that producers in Mexico, let's say, would be able to trade on equal terms with producers in the United States. They don't. Why? Because interest rates in Mexico are 60%, fuel prices are three times what they are in the United States, there's no support to small farmers, and the United States practices commodity dumping, okay? Which has been the basis of impoverishing the entire southern part of Mexico, precisely in the areas where the Zapatistas are building their movement. So that free trade is a completely misleading concept. We must understand that this is an interventionist framework. It's a manipulative process. Okay? What is it free to have interest rates at 550%? Tell me. I mean, I'm not inventing the figures. Those are the official figures of the IMF for Turkey. Okay? Just happens a few weeks ago. A country of 40 million people. Okay? What is the freedom of saying gas prices go up 31 times in Peru in 1990 after an IMF reform? They said it was in French we have a term, la vérité des prix. Okay? The question of fair trade, which I support, which is the idea of having producers receive the value of what they produce. First of all, it, unless you dismantle the whole system of commodity trade, which is dominated, let's say, by Cargill, Monsanto, etc., you're not going to have it. Okay? Coffee producers get 50 cents a kilo. Coffee sold in the stores is at $20 a kilo. The difference is 19.5. Where does that go? It goes to the circuits of distribution, retail trade, wholesale trade, banking, real estate, import-export. The producers are impoverished. We have to change the nature of that system. We can't simply... I mean, there are initiatives, fair trade initiatives, which I think are very good, and they should be commended. But ultimately, we're dealing with a political stance with regard to corporate power, which impoverishes people, okay? Which pays them 50 cents when, in fact, the value of their commodities is worth $20, okay? That is the basis, so we have to change that system. Now, if you take farmers in Western Canada, we're talking about fair trade. Why are they going bankrupt? Getting back to the same kind of issues in a free trade environment. If it's a free trade environment, people should be moving up. They're not. Why? I'll tell you why. Because the big biotechnology firms, Cargill, Monsanto and company, they control the inputs. Okay? In other words, they control farm inputs, fertilizer, insecticide, genetically modified seeds, and so on. And they also control the price at which they buy from the farmer, even though there's a marketing mechanism, so on. But ultimately, that's what's going to happen when all the subsidies and marketing structures collapse under free trade. The farmer's going to be caught in a sandwich between the same companies. The prices of inputs will go up, and the price of the farm gate price will go down, and they will be pushed into bankruptcy by these biotech companies. And there are a handful of them around the world. Okay? I mean, we know them. There's a lot of research on them. Answer to that, if you want fair trade, dismantle Monsanto. Okay? That's the answer.
I just wanted to build on the question that was asked a little earlier. A few years ago, there was, when the MAI was under discussion, there was a grassroots movement, at least somewhat resembling the one you're proposing, and it achieved its end in terms of defeating the MAI. And now we face basically the same problem in a slightly different form. So... In a way, do you see that there are certain limitations with this, with the so-called grassroots movement that doesn't enter the parliamentary arena to make more fundamental, maybe long-term changes than simply opposing a specific agreement?
But with regard to the MAI, it's true that the MAI was defeated. I was active in the MAI movement. I was in Paris at the time when this decision was taken by the OECD not to proceed with the MAI. But in fact, what we have a whole series of MAI clones, okay? So what they did is that they moved the MAI to the WTO and to the FTAA. And essentially, the citizens' movement, I think, I mean, that was an effective movement, but it was not enough. Okay? And it also, it was possible because there were divisions between the Europeans and the Americans with regard to an MAI agreement under the OACD auspices. And then I think they simply decided, well, let's not, the divisions existed at a governmental level. There was a movement by citizens against it. We haven't actually, let's be clear, we haven't reversed the tide. I mean, if people believe, because we have to understand, you know, they look at Seattle, then they look at Porto Alegre, then they say Quebec City, and say, have we reversed the tide? Is global civil society on the winning side? I say it isn't. And some of the reasons for that is precisely what I've been discussing on this process of sucking people into a dialogue. Incidentally, if you look at Porto Alegre, some of the organizations who were in Porto Alegre were also in Davos talking to Bill Gates. Now, is that the way to run to oppose the empire, to go inside the beast and start saying I think that we have to look at these various contradictions. When we look at Porto Alegre, very significant gathering and so on. But at the same time, bear in mind that a lot of people who went there, they were funded by the governments. Why do the governments fund counter-summits? They fund counter-summits because they're not funding this one, okay? They're funding the other one. They're not funding, I'm not getting any money to come to Quebec City, okay? And that is, nobody is getting money. The other people get money, they stay in hotels, they get air tickets and so on, and they are being channeled into, sometimes without realizing it, they're being channeled into a certain boxes of dissent, okay? And they have, then the media picks it up and says, oh, there's been a big movement in Porto Alegre, there's been a big movement in Quebec City. In fact, we must understand that we are tremendously weak. We are very divided. We have a lot of divisions within the mainstream organizations which represent us, like the trade unions. We have to start democratizing the trade unions. And then perhaps we can start. We're not going to necessarily disarm the system overnight. We have to do it piecemeal. But I think one of the issues is precisely to block this trade agreement. And how do we block it? We have to question its fundamental legitimacy. And we have to explain not to a few thousand people, but several million people throughout the land what this is going to do to them. What kind of society will we live in when our public services are run by McDonald's, okay? When our schools are run by McDonald's, we won't even need to go to McDonald's. They'll have them. They'll be running the school, okay? And then they'll have a TV camera. And then they'll have a private clinic in the shopping center, and only people who go to McDonald's will be able to go to the clinic. That's the kind of world we're going to be living in. That is the message. We have to disarm this system. We have to do it through a mass movement, not through discourse. Those counter summits, it's always the same people. I've been to tons of them. Always the same people. We have to involve more people. We have to establish counter summits everywhere in the country, in the 34 countries. That's what we have to do. And eventually start questioning the legitimacy of these people.
I'd like to make a sociological comment and question about the American empire, because I have had the feeling now for 5 years, perhaps a little longer, that the American Empire is taking over the world, but it will be challenged within our lifetimes, not my lifetime, but your lifetimes, as students by the Chinese, who are the next big threat. And that's already seen, of course, by our friend, our president, not our friend, President of the USA, Bush. I had a feeling when I was listening to your presentation, which was very dynamic and emotional, charged up with enormous feelings, and I was listening to people talking in France before the revolution in France, people listening in the streets before they did the barricades and took over the reign from the French king. You were presenting a similar picture of a very entrenched oligarchic power with all their fingers and all the centers of power in the whole country, or the whole world in this case, and you were urging us to go to the barricades, as happened in Paris, and be hurt, killed, or whatever, to bring in a new revolution. And that is, and the revolutions you're talking about, the revolution is not more than, not just another democratic kind of protest. It's a revolution that you are urging us to get involved in, and that is probably essential. But I want to give one quick question regarding the Roman Empire, which ran the world for 4 or 5 centuries, I believe, or longer perhaps, doesn't matter. But they were upset finally by the hordes from another part of the world. They had the control of the military and the political system, and they went from being a democracy in the short way, in the short form, to an oligarchy and ruled by tyrants and so on. And it seems to me that we need to take a sociological look at these empires that come and go. I've been a follower for many years of Pierre Trim Sorokin, the leading American sociologist who talked about the rise and fall of civilizations. And it also, of course, involves empires, but not always empires and civilizations correspond. And I'm wondering, in terms of your presentation, I think it's very sound to say we have to have a mass movement. We can't rely upon a given political party in Canada or other places. We're into a social movement of a wide base, a very broad base. But I'm not sure how you are discussing the problems, the possibilities of non-cooperation and non-violence against an empire who trusts in money and trusts in military power to get their things done. And I'd like to see you talk about this possibility and for this present protest group we have here this week, and also for future events, because this is just one of a series of things that's going to challenge the whole democratic hopes of people across the world. And you have a brilliant economic analysis, and I'm suggesting only that we need maybe a bit broader base and more emphasis upon how to deal with these military types who are going to be manning the wall around this town, and other people of this type later on.
Thank you. I think we are certainly probably living, when we may not be aware, the most serious economic and social crisis in modern history. Okay, and that's not incidentally, when a crisis occurs, it is not immediately acknowledged by the dominant powers and ideology. And 1929, it took quite a number of years before they actually said it was a Great Depression. And I mean, if you look at some of the statements of the Harvard Economic Institute in the early 30s, they were saying exactly what they're saying now. They were saying, you know, it's global, economic prosperity in the United States, and everything is good, and so on and so forth. Exactly. We're living through the most serious stock market meltdown. It didn't start this year. It started in 97, okay, up and down. It is not, it is a, it has also led to a tremendous appropriation of wealth, which is unprecedented in any historical period. Similarly, as you pointed out, the post-Cold War era, supposed to be a peaceful era. How many wars have there been? 3 million people have died in wars in Central Africa. 3 million, unreported. Okay? Who is behind these wars? The United States. It's documented. They finance the wars. They kill the leaders. You know, the plane of Abiyarimana was shot down on the orders of the CIA. It's documented. I mean, it's documented by the French Assembly. Okay? I'm not inventing this. When they don't like a leader, they have him shot. Okay? And then they finance armies. They finance one army, finance another. They finance the KLA. They finance the Chechen rebels. They're also financed by drug trade and the CIA. Okay? So they have the insurgencies all over the world. They're militarizing the South American continent. They're using the drug trade. They use the drug trade not only to finance these insurgencies, but also to prop up the stock market. Meanwhile, there is the most massive arms economy. I mean, the stock market has collapsed in civilian stocks, but the military-industrial complex is moving up and up. New weapon systems, some very scary weapon systems, climate manipulation, new generation of nuclear arms, all sorts of laser-controlled things, control of individuals, the drones that you can send into this meeting place, which are about this big, okay? They're like the size of a mosquito. They will relay information out to a video camera somewhere, to a video receiver somewhere else. All this is leading to tremendous influx of development of what we call the military-industrial complex, which is really the basis for building that empire. It's the military intelligence establishment, the defense contractors, and Wall Street, which constitute the power base of the system. And that empire is being built not only in the Americas, but in Central Asia, in the Balkans, in Central Africa, in Southeast Asia, where countries are being destabilized using so-called free market reforms. And that's the basis of conquest. Okay? Trade is the basis of conquest. It has always been the basis of conquest, historically. Okay? If you go back to the British Empire and you look at the texts I don't have them with me, but you go back to the texts of the British Foreign Office, they would say, well, we have to install a new king in Siam. Okay? That's what they said. Let's install a new king in Siam. And they did. They installed Rama IV, King Mongkut, okay? King and I, Yul Brynner. for those who saw the film, I mean, people who are more than 40 years old might have seen it, but most may not. It's a classic. But in any case, and I don't know whether Anna Leon Owens might have been a British agent. I think she was, okay? But that's another matter. But we have to see this, the relationship between militarization and trade and the era in which we are. We can't talk of rise and falls of empires because this empire is rising. What happens when it falls? It has to be dismantled. And the Roman Empire declined because there are many interpretations, but the Roman Empire declined due to a deficiency of aggregate demand. Why? Because the slave economy had become so generalized that consumption levels had collapsed and all types of independent labor and farming and so on was driven out of business, okay? Because labor was so cheap, the slave labor economy was so cheap, it created bankruptcies in all other sectors of the economy, and ultimately the levels of consumption collapsed. That, I'm not saying that that is the sole cause, but it was the underlying weakness at the end of the Roman Empire that simply it led to massive impoverishment, not only of the people who were enslaved, but of all other social categories except the upper classes. And there's something similar going on today with IMF, economic medicine, and free trade. It's a similar type of process, operating, of course, in a very different context.
Michelle, my good friend Michelle. My name is Connie Fogo. I'm from the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee. Je suis l'intervenant avec Michel Noumark-Tremblay ici à Québec dans le processus à la Cour supérieure du Québec. Et c'était ce matin, it was this morning that a decision was made, brought down by Judge Blanchet to say that the fence has to stay. Although there was a serious, grave interference with Canadian rights and freedoms under our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. He said, under the circumstances, however, it's justified. Judge Blanchet is wrong in law, and the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee, le Comité de la Liberté Canadienne, we are going to the Supreme Court of Canada. Our lawyers... I just instructed our lawyers this afternoon because of the civil code in Quebec, which is different, c'est différent que l'autre procès de cour civil dans l'autre part du Canada. Since it's different, we were interveners, not major parties, which means we don't have the same kind of standing. However, this judge let us be there for the constitutional arguments that we can make because we are in the courts on a number of other fronts. We are in the courts on the MAI. We're waiting for leave to speak to the Supreme Court of Canada on that one, precisely because the core that Michelle is talking about is absolutely illegal by which this process is being imposed on us, whereby we don't have elected people making decisions and putting us into these treaties. We have officials, unelected people from Canada and from other parts of the world who are gathering to do decisions and put us into arrangements that are absolutely, in Canadian law, illegal. And we're saying the law is the law, apply the law. That's what we're saying. There is a rule of law in Canada, and it was the case that the lawyer... Guy Bertrand took here on the constitutional question, reasserted the Canadian law that the rule of law applies to every Canadian. It's one law for all. That applies to the Prime Minister of Canada, and it applies to the lowest person in the down in the welfare situation. It applies to the fact that our Constitution has to be applied and the law of Canada has to be applied, and we have a right to have that assessed and asserted. And I'm optimistic. I'm sorry if I'm taking a bit of time, but I want... Michelle actually asked me to come here as well tonight. I'm going to be speaking anyway, but I want the people to realize, in answer to the question that somebody put forward, what can we do, where can we go, is there any political route? There are two avenues. One is the political avenue, and I have to tell you, reading Hansard, all the people that are representing us there are either stupid, they don't know what they're talking about, or they're traitors. And so they're a problem. They're a problem, and the second route is the legal route. We have strong constitutional protections, and we're simply saying as Canadian citizens, apply the law. And so we're going on our way up the ladder to the Supreme Court of Canada. And I believe, and I hope, and I trust that our Supreme Court of Canada will apply the law. That's not just the law under our Constitution. It goes back to the Magna Carta. So in answer to the question that Michelle is talking about, it's not free trade, it's true, but fundamentally what we're facing here is the very core of the destruction of democracy. That's what's happening. And people have died. The world wars that were fought were about this very question. Revolution in France, revolution in the United States, were all over these kinds of principles. We in Canada have been protected and lucky. But now we're facing what everybody else is facing. And you, the youngest, well, they're involved and they're going to suffer the same consequences. They've already suffered some, and they're going to suffer along with the rest of us continually. And it's the young people who are going to be as the young people ever were in times of war, which we're in, are going to have the toughest part of the battle. But I'm here from British Columbia because I'm going to be standing at that fence. I'm going to hope to avoid pepper spray and plastic bullets. But I have a right, and you have a right, a guaranteed right, to assemble, to speak, to be seen, and to be heard. That's the law. And we're going to assert it. So, Michelle, my question to you, because you were one of the ones that has encouraged this use of our legal vehicle in Canada. And I remember you a couple of years ago where you were saying, can we get other countries, other citizens in other places to try to apply their law in the same kind of way? What have you learned or have you found that's happening like we're doing here in the use of the internal law in other jurisdictions? Because we have those two routes, and if we don't use one of those two, we're left to revolution.
According to structural adjustment processes, downsizing government is one of the most important things, so they can't get in the way of the corporate rule and getting away with. We won't have to worry about United States or Canada. It'll be just corporate rule. The war has been going on in the United States for a long time. We have more than 2 million people in jail. I think along with everything else, the prison industrial complex should be added to your to your list.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part also of an internal cheap labor economy, and prisons are now run as businesses. And the prison population is extremely large, particularly among African Americans, and people are arrested. People are arrested on any pretext and then held in jail for years and years and years. That's democracy in the United States.